And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and joining us now is WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. We're going to talk about the Democratic primary debate that took place here in Ohio on Tuesday night. Howard, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, so you watched this debate out of Westerville last night. What stood out to you?
Several things. I mean, obviously the location was interesting because Westerville is a pretty prosperous suburb of the Columbus area, and it went for Hillary Clinton 4 years ago, and it had been a very Republican area prior to that. But the demographics are changing there, and I think the Democrats realize that. Things that stood out to me were the appeals that were being made to voters who traditionally have voted Democratic, like in eastern Ohio, southern Ohio, up and down the Ohio River, but who switched this time or in 2016 and went for Donald Trump, mainly because they live in an area of the state where industries like the steel industry, automotive industry, the coal industry, all of these industries have just taken a huge, huge hit. And so many people have been thrown out of jobs. And they had this feeling that nobody pays any attention to them, nobody cares about them. And Trump was able to convince them, I am the person who can fix your problems. And now you've got this stage full of Democratic candidates all trying to convince those people, because those people could turn Ohio from red to blue, that Trump has failed them and that they are much more effective at creating jobs.
Well, so this was a debate in Ohio, but of course draws a national audience.
Absolutely.
And it seemed while watching this that you could tell the candidates got the message from their teams that the stakes are higher this time. We're getting closer and closer to Iowa and New Hampshire. It's time to stake your claim to whatever plank of the Democratic ladder you're going to be on when it's time to go into the final round of whoever's left standing. Did you notice that there was some tougher rhetoric between the more progressive side and the people who are trying to possibly upend Joe Biden, not from the left, but as a fellow moderate?
And also, I think that, you know, aside from Joe Biden, I think Elizabeth Warren may well be the front runner right now, because if you listen to what was going on last night and how many of those Democratic candidates were attacking her for her Medicare for All plan. And it was really strange. I mean, she said, you know, at one point she said, well, you people are just looking campaign lines here. What are you doing? And it did have that kind of a sound to it. But I don't think that most people, even in the Democratic Party, are convinced yet that Medicare for All is a good deal for them. They want to hear more.
And it sounds like they have become champions for the policy that they implemented back in 2010, or at least approved back in 2010, the Affordable Care Act, right? And
absolutely.
So they're like, this was a hard thing to get through, and this is what we have. You will upend any progress that we've made if you bring this to – that seems to be one of the main issues here, the linchpin and the divide between the left – and the centrist, more moderate people.
Exactly right. I mean, that is, you know, that they want to preserve what we have or what came about during the Obama administration.
Well, let me ask you how that health care plan appeals to people in Ohio, because I did notice last night that while there was one prominent Democrat not on stage, some of his words did make repeated appearances, and that is Ohio Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown.
Yes.
And his catchphrase, the dignity of work.
Yes. Yes. And Sherrod had put out a email earlier suggesting to his friends who were running for the Democratic nomination, if you want something to talk about the dignity of work. Talk about the value that there is in every job and that the obligation that we have to those people to provide basic services like health care, make it affordable and available to them.
Howard Wilkinson is WVXU's senior political analyst. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. For more on last night's Democratic presidential debate in Westerville, we're joined live by our friends from Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, reporters Joe Ingles. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
And we have Andy Chow with us as well. Hi, Andy.
Hey, Michael.
So, debate hangovers, or how is everything feeling up there right now?
We're a little tired, yeah. But I think first of all, just as far as the event goes itself, I think Otterbein really rose to the challenge of hosting such a big event where yes. you're used to seeing these in arenas and at larger schools. But Otterbein in Westerville, it was a very well-run program. You didn't see a lot of traffic. You didn't see a lot of weird logistical issues. Right. So from that standpoint, it went really well. It reminded me of the bigger events that took place in Cleveland and how impressed people were with the city of Cleveland for the things they did for the Republican events. But as far as the debate goes itself, we heard from a lot of people beforehand and even some afterwards about how excited they were to be there. And from my perspective, I went around Westerville and Otterbein's campus to talk to different demonstrators and protesters and people who are rallying for one cause and another. And they thought it was really cool to have such a big event on the national stage where they could actually come to Central Ohio and talk about the issues they wanted to talk about, whether it was actually mentioned on the debate stage or not.
I thought that the crowd in the debate last night was really interesting as well, because, I mean, there was certainly some applause and some laughter on occasion, but not as much as the previous ones. This seemed like an engaged audience. Joe, did you notice that while you were close by, that these were folks who were there to listen?
They were there to listen. And in fact, I talked to some of the folks while they were standing in line before the event to see what they wanted to hear from the candidates. And, you know, of course, there were students from Otterbein, and their big concern was student debt. Some of them said that they've had to take on a lot of student debt. They worry about it all the time. They know that they won't be able to afford a home. One of them said they can't afford a car. You know, they know they won't have a good standard of living because they've taken on the student debt. Some of the students say that they know of friends who have had to drop out because they just can't afford to stay in school. And that, you know, they've resigned themselves to the fact that they're going to have to take on that debt because there's no other way for them to get, you know, through school. But they would like to see a plan that helps them, you know, on the other side, once they graduate, start working, you know, be able to pay that back in some kind of way so that they're, you know, they're able to have the American dream. And that was a huge concern among the students. The older people who were there, they were equally concerned about other things. But one of the things that kind of shocked me was they were concerned about getting someone in there who's electable in their eyes. They talked about, you know, Ohioans who went for Donald Trump or the Ohioans who sat home in the 2016 election. And one woman told me that, you know, she wanted someone who would appeal to her husband. And she said her husband has said basically that, you know, he doesn't want someone who gives away everything. He wants someone who's moderately sensible and doesn't want to raise taxes and, you know, that kind of thing. So there was, you know, there was on one hand clamoring for big programs like relieving debt. But on the other hand, there was, hey, can we get someone who's not going to rock the boat too much so that they can be elected?
And that message that you're sharing with us from the two different generations of voters seemed to play out on the stage. And I know that when we talked yesterday ahead of the debate, you indicated that it didn't look like there was any candidate that was winning over people more significantly than any other in terms of representation out in the crowd somewhere. But I think that what we saw last night was the candidates making active choices on whom they were to appeal to. And that included Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg positioning themselves as the moderate, we can get things done crowd. And of course, you have Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, who are probably speaking more to those students about the debt and all that. So I guess my question now, Joe, is did any candidate impress more than the others based on the feedback?
You know, that's That's a really good question. But if you look at all the candidates, none of them really spoke to hitting all those needs. You know, yeah, you're right. Warren and Sanders spoke more about student debt. But, you know, the thing is, we didn't hear anything really new. We didn't hear how they're going to pay for that plan. We didn't hear the details of their plan and how it would work. These are the things that people wanted to know. People wanted details. They knew that Liz Warren and Bernie Sanders have plans to help college students with that. That was a known going into it. But did they hear anything above that? I don't know. I mean, I didn't hear anything that they spoke to. Now, you know what I did hear? I heard them talking a lot about impeachment and age of candidates. And all the people that I interviewed outside, those two issues never came up.
Is that right? So there wasn't right. any immediate concern about impeachment from the voters.
No.
Very interesting.
And I wonder, you have to wonder if the moderators and the people asking the questions, if they had really thought about those questions from the standpoint of what do the people who are attending want to know? Mm-hmm. Because that's not what they wanted to know.
Andy, you spent some time in the free speech zones, they call them. Mm-hmm. What did you see?
You name it. It was I thought that maybe people were embellishing when they were going to say this was democracy in action, but it was a hotbed of activity all around campus, all around Uptown Westerville, which is a heavy pedestrian area. I mean, you would see people going around canvassing for different candidates. So different supporters for the different Democratic candidates are passing around petitions to try to get their candidate on the ballot for the Ohio primary. So that was one group of people. Then you had people talking about school choice. You had people talking about how you had PETA, the animal rights group, talking about how going vegan can help climate change. You had a group called Period, which talks about the high price of feminine hygiene products and how that can create what they call period poverty, which creates all sorts of physical and social health issues. And then there was an open carry march where a group of gun owners carried around their AR-15s around campus. I think they got a special permit because they were guided around by law enforcement. So you had all sorts of people from all sorts of different sides of the spectrum.
How many people were walking around with AR-15s?
Oh, just a handful of people. I would say 7 or 10 people with AR-15s or signs that support gun ownership. It was a sort of a common thing to see. I've been going to these open carry rallies for a while now, so nothing out of the ordinary when it comes to what an open carry rally actually looks like. But yeah they had their AR-15s.
Yeah, and so did you talk to them at all?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So what did they have to say?
Well, of course, they're not happy with what the Democrats are saying when it comes to gun control. They're pretty vigilant about the fact that they believe that the right to own a gun is a constitutional right. It's something that cannot be taken away from them. You have candidates like Beto O'Rourke, who's really doubling down on the issue of taking away AR-15s. And so they say that this is their big issue, that they will not stand for what they see as radical ideas coming from the Democratic candidates when it comes to gun control.
Did you talk to some of the other groups that were represented there about why they choose to be at a Democratic presidential primary debate? You know, you talked about the price of feminine hygiene products or PETA being there to promote veganism. What was their idea for why they were there?
There were two big reasons why all these groups were here. One reason was that it was just a big platform or big stage that was created for them, since there were going to be hundreds or even thousands of people walking around campus to either just be a spectator or to actually go into the event itself. I think these groups saw that as an opportunity to get their message across. And then the other thing was just exercising free speech. And the common thing that we heard from every single group, even from groups that disagreed with each other, they said that they appreciated that they live in a country where they're able to to voice what they want to say, to talk about the issues that mean a lot to them. On one side of the street, you had a bunch of younger college students stumping for different Democratic candidates, people holding up Booker signs, people holding up Elizabeth Warren signs. You cross the crosswalk to the other side, and you have somebody wearing a Hillary Clinton mask and with signs that support Donald Trump and signs that sort of bash the Democrats. And then I asked each group, hey, what do you think of the other person? So I asked the Democrats, what do you think about that Trump supporter? And they say, well, we disagree with him, but we think it's kind of cool that we can all stand on street corners and talk about our issues. And then I asked the Donald Trump supporter and I said, hey, what do you think about those young students who support their Democratic candidates? And he said, well, I disagree with them, but I really appreciate this opportunity to be able to speak freely. So there was a great appreciation for that opportunity all around.
Very cool. And Joe, we talked yesterday ahead of the debate about, you know, the tight squeeze to get into that gym. About 1,500 tickets or so were made available. Right. Lots more than that wanted to get in. So there were some watch parties. I'm wondering if after the debate, if any of the candidates made their rounds around Westerville at all.
Well, I don't know about that. I was actually in the spin room. And given the fact that some of the candidates didn't show up at the spin room, I would hope that they did make their way to the watch parties. But the spin room was, for anyone who's not familiar with it, the best way that it's described is speed dating with political candidates.
Yeah, it's kind of their opportunity to tell you why they won the debate, right?
Right, right. It's the room that reporters have access to, and basically all of the candidates or their surrogates come out and they answer, you know, questions from the reporter thrown out on the fly. And, you know, what we did see is that some of the bigger candidates, Joe Biden, for example, Liz Warren, Pete Buttigieg, they did not come into that area and answer questions. Now, Liz Warren did come into that area to go on CNN, but then she left immediately. She didn't answer any questions from reporters. So some of the candidates that are polling higher were not there. And Tom Steyer came out, and I think everyone who had a question for Steyer got an answer. Mm-hmm. I mean, he stayed out there a long time. We saw Andrew Yang come out. He stayed out there a long time. It seemed like the further down the list the candidate was as far as polling and being able to maintain their presence, those are the ones we heard from the most.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have both of you on. From the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Joe Ingles and Andy Chow, thanks so much for being here again.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks for having us.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.